Communication is going to be critical, and recognizing that the more stressed your employees are, the less productive they are.
Welcome back, friends. So wash your hands and settle in for episode 92 of Future Proof. I am your illness-free host. My name's Bill. Illness-free for now, I should say. It hasn't always been that way. Recently, I did come down with a flu not too long ago on my birthday, no less. 2 days later, my wife and daughter came down with it too. That's just the way we Sheridans are. We share everything. Luckily, all three were pretty mild cases. We had all gotten flu shots late last year, which probably helped stop it in its tracks. And, you know, a week later, we were all back in the saddle, so to speak. Plus, it wasn't the coronavirus, so we had that going for us, which is nice. Man, I don't even know where to start with the coronavirus. And before I even do start, keep in mind that I recorded this about a week ago, so I'm not going to talk about any recent developments or stats or breaking news. Chances are things are a whole lot different now than they were when I recorded this, even though it's only been a few days. That's how fast this thing is moving. And listen, we've all gone through some sort of disaster at one time or another, right? Snowstorms, floods, hurricanes, earthquakes, tornadoes, droughts. God doesn't discriminate. I mean, we've all felt that fear from time to time, if not that outright pain. But this feels different, doesn't it? It's not local. It's global. And none of us knows where or when it's going to stop or how far it's going to reach. This thing has caught everyone's attention, and not necessarily in a good way. I mean, when they start canceling events like South by Southwest, you know it's pretty serious. Still, a lot of the stuff I've been reading lately falls somewhere between, I don't know, paranoia and panic. And given the reliability of the quote-unquote news we see in our social feeds, that's not good for anybody. But reliable, useful, trustworthy sources of information do exist. And one of them is Business Learning Institute thought leader Jennifer Elder. She's our guest this week. And Jennifer, she's compiled a list of questions that business leaders can use to help their organizations prepare for the potential impact of the coronavirus. We'll get to those questions here in just a moment. First, a quick reminder, this week's show is brought to you by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. Now, back to this coronavirus. Here's something a little freaky. I'm not sure if you heard about this or not, but last fall, just a few short months ago, the folks at Johns Hopkins, the World Economic Forum, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they brought public health experts from around the world together in New York City for a little simulation that they called Event 201. Specifically, they wanted to simulate a pandemic with potentially catastrophic global consequences in order to determine how governments and global institutions could best work together in response to such event. So the illness at the center of the simulation was called CAPS, C-A-P-S, which stands for Coronavirus-Associated Pulmonary Syndrome. It began theoretically in Brazilian pigs, who then passed it on to farmers. And this, keep in mind, was all done just 2 months before COVID-19 emerged in central China. 3 months into the simulated pandemic, the hypothetical illness had sickened 30,000 people and killed 2,000. Just an aside, about 3 months after COVID-19 emerged, the real numbers for our current coronavirus were about 104,000 cases and 3,500 deaths. Just food for thought. The simulated CAPS illness ended after 18 months and about 65 million deaths worldwide. Adam Raymond reported on that simulation for New York Magazine. Here's what he writes. He says, in the weeks after the emergence of the coronavirus in Wuhan, China, event organizers were forced to answer questions about whether they predicted the current pandemic and contend with a few conspiracy theories. The exercise was not a prediction, organizers insist. Quote, we are not now predicting that the nCoV-2019 outbreak will kill 65 million people, the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security said in a statement. Although our tabletop exercise included a mock novel coronavirus, the inputs we used for modeling the potential impact of that fictional virus are not similar to nCoV-2019. Rather than serving as a predictive tool, organizers say the simulation was more about identifying opportunities to improve the response to a potential pandemic. To that end, they produced 7 recommendations to diminish the potential impact and consequences of pandemics, end quote. And you can find those recommendations along with simulation videos that track the potential impact of a global pandemic on trade, travel, finance, medicine, government. You can find all of that at the Event 201 website, which is centerforhealthsecurity.org/event201. Just fascinating stuff about the potential impact of this type of pandemic on global institutions, and certainly, given all that's going on right now, very, very timely stuff. Now, you know, we don't get that deep into the coronavirus weeds in this week's conversation, but we do have a series of really practical questions that business leaders should be asking themselves about how they should be responding to the real-world COVID-19 situation in regards to their employees, their operations, their finances, their customers, and supply chains. Really, really good stuff, really timely stuff here this week, and important stuff that we should all be asking now because, something tells me this is all going to get worse before it gets better. Here, then, is my conversation with BLI thought leader Jennifer Elder. Jennifer, now you and I have both had our share, it sounds like, of run-ins with natural disasters. We've both dealt with tons of snow from mid-Atlantic nor'easters, and we've both been through hurricanes in South Florida, actually. It looks like you've dealt with earthquakes and ice storms. I've had uncomfortably close brushes with tornadoes in the Midwest. And none of those things are any fun. This coronavirus, though, strikes me as a bit different. Have you experienced anything quite like this before?
No, and I'm not sure anyone really has. This is a unique event in that it has global effect. And so hurricanes, floods, tornadoes are going to be very regionalized. So yes, it's very traumatic when somebody goes through it. But once you come out the other side, the rest of the world is fine.
Right.
We're in a situation where the rest of the world is not fine right now. And there are going to be sweeping impacts that will show up as ripples or waves that come in after we've dealt with the initial crisis. There are companies that are worried about the supply chain. So Apple has already warned on their earnings just based on whether or not they'll be able to get parts from China.
Right. Yeah, it's getting a little crazy out there. Just, a quick scan of the news recently. There seems to be, you know, a lot of paranoia out there. I've been getting a lot of the you know, coronavirus elbow bumps instead of handshakes. A lot of folks wearing medical masks out there. I've actually had one conference that I'm going to in a couple of months canceled already over an abundance of caution. I was just looking at the news, the first shipment at the Port of Baltimore canceled due to the virus. A dozen schools in Washington State have temporarily closed. My wife actually works for Boeing, and she just told me that out in Washington, where Boeing has a huge presence, if employees are able to perform their work offsite, they're being recommended to telecommute from home in coordination with their managers. So there's a lot of stuff going on out there. Is all of this caution justified at this point, do you think? Or is this kind of an overreaction of sorts at this point?
Yes and yes. I think there is some overreaction, but then it's on the other hand, there's no one answer to risk management. And so I think what's important for businesses to remember is we've really got to think about what is truth and what is fear mongering. So, for example, people wearing masks. There's not a doctor out there who says that wearing a mask will stop you from getting the virus. I've actually heard that it could make it worse. Because when you have a mask on your face, you're much more likely to put your hands to your face. The mask is good if somebody's already sick and will prevent them from spreading it as easily. So, and I think the issue, one of the biggest issues is the world hasn't seen this in recent history. I mean, there's been the bubonic plague. We've had issues like this before, but not in our lifetime. So people aren't sure how to react. And it's hard to know what the line is. So I think it's better to be too cautious than not cautious enough.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, this is really kind of uncharted territory for us.
Yes. Here in New Hampshire, we have someone who was potentially had the coronavirus. They were being tested. They were asked to self-quarantine. And before the results came back that said, yes, they were positive, they decided they weren't sick enough. And so they went out to an event.
Right.
And so
how many people they were in contact with, you know?
So we already have at least one more. So, you know, it's better to be cautious than not cautious enough in this situation, but there's no need to outright panic.
So I'm curious if you have been able to kind of curate some basic tips at this point about how to best address the situation as it currently stands.
Yes. There are a lot of things that businesses can do or organizations can do to start addressing the situation. And number one is don't panic, but start planning. Start thinking about what if something happened, what would you do? I think a really key element is to show concern for your employees. They're scared. As much as you are, they're scared for themselves. They're scared for their family. They're not sure what's going on. So everybody is a little edgy about this. We also need to show concern for our customers. How are they feeling about this? For tax practitioners who have clients come to the office, do your clients really want to come to the office now? Or do you want to give them an option of working with you virtually? So it's thinking about, what can we do to calm people down? I think that's a key element. And that's going to require a lot of communication.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of that communication. Maybe just things to keep in mind or questions to be asking yourself if you are an employer or, you know, you work for a company. For instance, when it comes to your employees, What are some things that you need to take into consideration when it comes to the situation?
Well, as an employer, you do have a responsibility to keep your employees safe. So one of the questions to ask is, how can you protect your employees? So if you require your employees to travel, maybe you need to think about, is that travel necessary right now? Or what can we do to keep each of these employees safe? So it is something that OSHA is concerned about. But again, we don't want to panic about this, but you might want to, can you educate your employees about how to protect themselves? Have a doctor or a nurse come in and talk about what are the best steps that you can take? How would you know if you have the coronavirus? What are the symptoms? But, you know, specifically, what can you do? You'd be amazed at how many people really don't know how to wash their hands properly.
Yeah, as simple as that.
Something as simple as that. I travel a lot, so I'm in restrooms in the airport, and I can't tell you the number of times I see people who are just rubbing their hands together. And that's considered washing your hands. Whereas the reality is you should be washing your hands like you see doctors do on the TV, mm-hmm. where you rub your hands together, but you're also washing the top of your hands.
Yep.
Or I saw a great meme today, wash your hands as if you have just eaten a bushel of Maryland crabs and you need to take your contacts out.
Yeah, you definitely want to wash your hands well.
Yes. Some other things to think about around your employees would be, how are you going to handle it if one of your employees gets sick? Do they, you know, at what point in time do you send somebody home? Is it the very first cough? Do you wait until they appear to be sweating? You know, what is going to be your policy for keeping people in the office or sending them home? If they do get sick, the coronavirus is lasting a little bit longer than we've seen in normal flu. The recommended quarantine is 14 days. Most people don't have 14 days of sick time. So how are you going to deal with this if employees are out? And think about, what are your legal obligations? Employers may want to contact an HR attorney and ask, what do I need to do? When is it my responsibility? When is it my employee's responsibility?
Well, in this whole era of remote work too, kind of raises some questions. If an employee is sick and decides to, you know, maybe give it a go and work from home, at what point is that okay? And at what point should you say, or should they say, look, you need to take care of yourself and just not do any work at all, period, you know?
Yes. Yes. If there's, and what if your spouse or your child gets sick?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to handle that? And yes, we can work from home. How much? So which of your employees can easily work from home? Who can't? What can your IT system handle it if everybody was working from home?
Right, right. All good questions. How about just generally your business's operations? How do we need to think differently about that in a world of coronavirus? I mean, you know, it's certainly one thing to go through like a localized natural disaster, as you said before, but how does this impact a business's operations?
Yeah, in general, we want to think about it from a variety of perspectives. What parts of your business are crucial to keep operating? Now, every business, I'd love to say every single employee was absolutely crucial, but that's not true. You know, if as much as I love accountants, the AP person, if they're not entering invoices for a couple of days, our company will survive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what people are necessary to keep your sales going? And how do you keep that going? So how do you keep your salespeople out there selling? How do you keep customer service people available to provide service? How do you keep your product going? So supply chain, where are you getting your goods from? And might there be a disruption there? How do you want to think about if customers come to your office or your location, do you want to put in a temporary ban on that? I've heard of office buildings now where unless you work in that office building, you are not allowed to enter the building because they're mm-hmm. trying to limit sort of that unknown exposure. If somebody does get sick in your office, what are you going to do then? How are you going to, everybody's going to be nervous about, so what if I catch it now? So you've got to think about how you would disinfect your office. Would you close it? How will you keep people informed? If you, now, right now, so many people have questions. I've heard that some companies are setting up a coronavirus information line or even a page on their website, internal page, that employees can go and find out what's going on and what they should do. Ernst & Young has decided that anybody going to a conference or any meeting of 100 people or more must get permission to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got to think about that. I think communication is going to be critical. and recognizing that the more stressed your employees are, the less productive they are. So taking the time to explain things to them and also giving people time to vent. You know, when you're nervous, it helps to be able to say, I'm nervous about this.
Yeah, you know, a little transparency and just listening and allowing them to do that kind of venting. I mean, that goes a long way toward just easing people's minds, I think.
Yes. And I think while this is a horrible event, and we'll see just how difficult it, the difficulties it creates in the global economy, but there are opportunities here. I think there are opportunities to solidify your relationship with your employees by being transparent, by acknowledging that you're and taking steps to try and care for your employees. This will go a long way to improving your employee engagement.
How about, and we've talked a lot about like internal operations, about our, you know, our employees and how to best handle the situation in terms of them. What about our customers?
There are some issues there. How will you handle it if one of your customers is affected by, their business is affected by the coronavirus? Out in Seattle, where so many companies have said all the employees will be working from home, the ancillary businesses that are dependent upon those employees, restaurants, convenience stores.
Oh, boy.
dry cleaning. You know, all these little businesses down in high commercial areas have no customers there. So they're not making any money.
That's a really interesting point. This has tendrils that reach into like every fabric of our society almost, doesn't it?
It really does. And so you have to worry about yourself. You really do have to worry about your customers and how, if they are affected financially, how does this affect you? And just for an example, for a CPA firm, if you have rules around collections, are you going to make exceptions for a company that's been affected by the coronavirus?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you going to hold tight? And if you're going to make exceptions, how long might you extend your terms? If we're conducting an audit, how might we be affected? How might our work be affected if the client's business is closed?
Right.
And something everybody needs to be thinking about is how long could your business survive if you still had to pay all of your bills and yet you have no new revenue?
These are all kind of like, you know, I keep going back to that bit of advice at the beginning, don't panic. And then we keep asking questions that make me want to panic a little bit.
Exactly. It's don't panic, but I think panic comes out when we're not prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if we take the time to think, so these businesses that have no traffic right now, if they think about, okay, how much cash do I have? How long can I go? Then they can start thinking about, if I can't pay all my bills now, which ones could I delay and which of my vendors should I call and see if it is okay to delay payment?
Mm-hmm.
So we can put things in place ahead of time rather than going, oh my gosh, I have no money in my checkbook and my rent is due and payroll is due and I don't know what to do. So that's why I think thinking about these questions will help alleviate some of that panic.
Yeah. And you know, these are all, I think it seems like almost this kind of snuck up on us. I mean, we've been hearing about coronavirus now for the last few months, but it's only been recently that it's really kind of hit home in terms of U.S. businesses. And all of a sudden, everyone is starting to, you know, circle the wagons and say, what are we going to do about this? So, I mean, you know, hopefully this is not a long-term thing. Hopefully this is something that, yeah, I mean, you know, this it's certainly a terrible situation. As you said, a tragedy in some parts of the world. But this too shall pass. And when it does, what kind of lessons should we take out of this? How can we prepare ourselves for the next time that something like this rolls around?
And I think that's a really key point, Bill, is that this is, right now, this is an unusual event that we have not seen the likes of before. But I don't think it's going to be the last. Mm-hmm. So there are some companies who were saying, well, I don't have to worry about this because it's not going to affect me and it will never happen again. Well, I'm not sure that either one of those statements is true. So, and there may be some people that it doesn't affect. No, I seriously thought that New Hampshire would be one of the last places to be infected. And it's in my county, of course.
Right.
So I think one of the, when this passes, and this, like you say, this too shall pass, is to step back and say, what did we do right? So even if you weren't affected, if you had communication going with your employees, with your customers, you'll hear some feedback that that made them feel better. So that'll tell you, let's do that again. If you are affected and you hadn't thought about how you might be affected, so maybe you thought your supply chain was fine, and then you discovered that a vendor to a vendor to a vendor is in China, and you don't have access to some raw materials, now you have learned you need to think a little bit deeper through your supply chain and use what happened well, what didn't happen well. So it's basically the same sort of thing you might do at the end of any project is do an assessment. What did I do right? So we need to do that again. And what could I have done better? And let's put something in place for next time, because there will be a next time.
Kind of like a you know, to borrow a phrase from the military, an after action review, right? So it's like we just went on this mission or whatever it is, and what happened? What went right? What went wrong? What can we learn from it? What can we do better next time?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That is exactly the case.
I'm kind of interested, Jennifer. We've talked a lot about this from a business point of view. And you, like me, I mean, we both kind of travel a lot for what we do individually. From an individual point of view, I mean, what are you doing differently as a result of this? I mean, this is kind of weird, you know? I mean, I work for the Maryland Association of CPAs, but I live in Missouri. And I never thought either of those places would really be impacted heavily by something like this. But then all of a sudden, I've got a new client in Seattle. And earlier this week, I was flying out to Washington, where there's a lot of hotspots coronavirus-wise, and all of a sudden I'm thinking differently about the way I travel and what I need to be doing to protect myself individually. What are you doing on an individual level to keep yourself safe as you travel from place to place?
On an individual level, number one, first question is, do I have to be there live? So can I do some consulting through Zoom or Skype? Mm-hmm. Or do I have to be there live? If I do have to get on a plane, personally, my immune system is just rock solid after traveling for a lot for the last 6 years.
I'm sure.
So I have never worried about it, but I'm starting to take precautions. So I now carry I have the alcohol solution to disinfect my hands on a regular basis. When I sit down on a plane, I break out the bleach wipes and wipe down everything. And yeah, I feel like a little bit of a crazy person, but I'd rather, if that's what it takes, is one wet wipe and looking a little crazy for 5 minutes, wiping down everything that I might touch, I'm okay with that.
And it's one thing that you can control, right? It's like, I can do this to protect myself. So
yes. And here's a silly thing that I learned the other day that I have verified is true, is that when you're on a plane, people will often turn off the vent above their head because they say, well, that's recirculated air. I don't want the germs on me. Mm-hmm. But by the time the germs come through that recirculated air, they've probably died. The germs you are most concerned about are the ones in the immediate area.
Yeah, I just read something like that recently as well, that, you know, you hear all this talk about recirculated air, but the filtration systems on planes are really good at like blocking those particulates, right? So exactly. The air that's getting blown on you might be really dry, but you're much more susceptible to what the person next to you is breathing on you than whatever air is coming through the plane. So,
exactly. So turning on that air vent is great. Mm-hmm. Another thing when traveling is one of the things we forget to clean is our phone. Ugh. So it's always in our hands. We put it down on surfaces and we just don't think about it. So wiping off your phone on a regular basis is a great idea. If you're staying in a hotel, wiping off doorknobs, and something that very rarely gets cleaned is the TV remote.
Oh, yes.
So wiping off the remote or even the switches to turn lights on and off. So a little bit of an abundance of caution, but right now I think it's, you know, that's not panicking. That's just taking an extra step to protect yourself.
Yeah, it's just thinking ahead and saying, what can I do to protect myself, as you said. So all great advice. This has been an enlightening conversation, Jennifer. Thanks for taking the time to do this. Any last advice, just kind of in general, about all this? I mean, we're at a point now where it seems to be, you know, we're going to see it get worse before it gets better. I don't know that that's true, but I suspect it might be. What kind of advice would you offer folks who are listening just to kind of, you know, I don't know, set their minds at ease or at least help them prepare for what's to come?
I think that the best advice is to stay calm. Grace under pressure is a very important skill. It's emotionally intelligent not to get people more riled up. And we want to be part of the broader solution. So it's really thinking about all of your stakeholders, your employees, your customers, your vendors, your community. What can we all do to help until this runs its natural course?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, another thing that I saw recently, just to kind of keep it all, to help us keep it all in perspective, is, you know, the fact that we're talking a lot about coronavirus right now, and the fact that seasonal flus are exponentially worse and cause much more damage, and yet we don't hear as much about those. But we just kind of naturally accept them as the course of, you know, living our annual lives. And
yes. That's a known devil.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the devil you know is much easier to deal with than the devil you don't.
Right. Exactly. And
the coronavirus is a little bit different. To put people's minds at ease, the mortality rate related to corona is far less than the seasonal flu. On the other hand, it is more contagious and it can last a little bit longer. So it is different and people are trying to figure out how to deal with that. And I think to some degree, in the beginning, it got blown out of proportion. And people in some other countries panicked and created more buzz, more issue than there needed to be. And I'm not trying to downplay it really, but it's just, we do want to stay calm and be reasonable about this. Again, I go back to the fact that you can't get masks anywhere. And yet everybody says that all the doctors say they don't work. So we want to be calm. We've been through similar things before. I worked at a company where we had the flu run through the entire company. Mm-hmm. And you could watch it move from office to office. And it just went down. And while the company never shut down, we did have departments that basically shut down.
Right.
So we've dealt with similar things before. I think that's why I keep saying it's important to stay calm. Take the steps that you can take now. And then worry when the time comes about the things that are out of your control.
That's great advice, Jennifer. Thank you so much for taking the time. Wash your hands. Stay safe. And thanks for being here. This has been reasoned advice, and I appreciate you taking the time to offer it. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate the conversation, and I look forward to the next time we can talk over a happier topic.
Me too. Thank you. That was BLI thought leader Jennifer Elder. You can find a complete list of her coronavirus-related questions for business leaders on either the MACPA's blog, macpa.org/blog, or on the BLI's blog, which is blionline.org/blog. And Jennifer is, by the way, leading a series of free webinars. They're titled Coronavirus, How to Prepare Your Business, Employees, and Customers. Again, they're absolutely free and full of great advice and information. You can register to attend one of these free webinars at macpa.org/coronavirus. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. We're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's all I got, gang. Stay safe, stay well, have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.